night, everyone. I'm going to call to order the House Committee on Rules for Thursday, April 6th. We are missing. Oh, there's Representative Barnhart. Okay, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2874.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2874 exempts email addresses and possession of offices of legislative department from mandatory disclosure under public records laws, permits upon request disclosure of email addresses used to distribute elective office holders' newsletters to current candidates who have filed to run for office, takes effect on the 91st day following adjournment sine die.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Phil Barnhart, State Representative from House District 11. I am here in support of House Bill 2874. If you'll look at the bill, you'll realize that it is simply a recitation of ORS 192.502, and the changes in that statute are found on page 7 and page 8 of the bill. The rest of it is simply because the rules require that the whole section be printed in the bill. This is brought here to deal with the issue of privacy of those who participate in the public process by sending us or giving us email addresses so that we can communicate with them, and also so that we can send them newsletters. Sometimes these email addresses may, in fact, be germane to some other issue, but most of the time when requests are given to us for email addresses, the purpose of the request is to use it for the purpose of spamming the person whose address they belong to. We've already, in prior years, made changes in the rules for the purpose of protecting email addresses in the possession or custody of agency or subdivision of executive branch, sub 40 sub A, a local government or local service district, or a special government body for exactly this kind of reason. Now, an email address would still be discoverable as a public record in the event that there was some important valid reason to do it. And of course, the contents of an email may still be a public record subject to release as a public record because of the content of the email. This doesn't protect the email at all. And then you'll note on the next page, the bill would allow for the release of the email lists to a current candidate who's filed for elective office upon receiving a request. So that, in other words, this email list would not belong. For emails lists that are used for the distribution of a newsletter. I've had the experience, and I suspect some others of us have it as well, of receiving requests for the release of contact email lists. And I'm quoting from an email that we received on this topic on December 3rd, 2015. And asking for it to be delivered in a specific format by a person who publishes a political newsletter, not a candidate, who simply wants to add email addresses to his list for the purpose of spamming those people. I believe that it's important that individuals be able to give us an email address through which we can send an e-newsletter to them if they would like that to happen without fearing that it's going to be released publicly and that they're going to then, as punishment for having participated in the public discourse, be receiving spam from other people. It's perfectly fair, of course, for a political candidate to write to the same people asking them for support in an election, even against the person who generated the list. And that's what the exception would do. So I would commend this bill to your attention. And note, the purpose of this is not to prevent disclosure of public information. The purpose of it is to protect the privacy of those who have asked for information to be sent to them as part of e-news letters, and also to protect those who write to us legitimately asking for information presenting positions on bills or a variety of other topics that would not be covered under this exception unless they're added to the e-newsletter list. That, again, as I say, it doesn't prevent the release of their of the content of the email, except for the email address itself.
Thank you, Representative Barnhart. Questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, with that, we don't have anyone else, do we? All right, with that, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2874. I will open a public hearing on House Bill 3408.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3408 clarifies a person may register to vote or update voter registration by having another person deliver registration cards to designated agency or official. And if a registered voter, if a voter registration card has missing or incomplete information, county clerk is to use all available resources to obtain missing or incomplete information. If the clerk is unable to obtain the information from current resources, county clerk is required to use reasonable efforts to contact person at least three times by telephone, mail, and email before the individual is not eligible to be registered.
Excellent. Thank you. Tabitha Pitzer, Rob Bovet, and Steve Trout. Have everybody come up all at once. It's just three of you, three seats. Go ahead.
All right. So hello, Chair Williamson, Vice Chair McLean, and my representative, Vice Chair Rayfield, and members of the committee. My name is Tabitha Pitzer. I am a student at Oregon State University, and I'm here to ask for your support for House Bill 3408. For the past 3 years, I've been actively involved on my campus registering students to vote as part of the Oregon Student Association's nonpartisan Voter Vote campaign. So Voter Vote is an annual nonpartisan campaign in which students in public higher education across the state of Oregon actively reach out to students on their campus to register students to vote, provide nonpartisan voter education, and also encourage all students to turn out to vote. We are very successful in our registration efforts. Last year, we registered over 4,000 beavers to vote, COBs, because we seek to make it as easy as possible to engage in the political process. Our voter registration process is simple. We provide students voter registration cards and then turn in the cards to our local elections office, eliminating the need for students to take time out of their busy schedules to go submit their registration card. Sometimes we receive cards that are incomplete. In this instance, we try to contact students to have them come into our student government office to complete the card. However, we only have 5 days to do this. If we're not able to complete the card, or if we are, we have to turn it into the elections office. It's at this point that we instill faith in the system and hope that our elections office will do all that they can to complete the card. House Bill 3408 outlines processes for elections offices to go through to ensure that they are doing all that they reasonably can to complete registration cards, including things like accessing previous voter registration information that third parties don't have access to for the purpose of card completion. And it simply codifies the processes that many of our partners in elections offices are already carrying out. House Bill 3408 also allows third-party entities, like myself, to continue to do the voter registration efforts that we do and simply ensures that we will continue to have the ability to turn in voter registration cards on behalf of registrants. When people register to vote through a third party, or when cards are given to elections offices, people often expect that they will then receive a ballot, sometimes unaware that their card is incomplete. It is our duty to ensure that we do everything in our power to complete that card so they can engage in the political process. Voting is one of the most essential parts of our democracy. Just as accessible voting is of key importance to a functioning and thriving democracy, so is accessible voter registration. Please support House Bill 3408 and allow us to continue to engage our communities in one of our most fundamental rights as citizens. Thank you.
Chair Williamson, members of the committee, for the record, Rob Ovette, Legal Counsel, Association of Oregon Counties. Here today representing the Oregon Association of County Clerks who are opposed to this bill. And let me explain why. While the clerks agree with generally everything you heard in the first half of what you just said, the clerks disagree that they're not already doing their job. They use extraordinary efforts to track down every incomplete registration. We utilize the OCVR system and all methods at our disposal to do so. And the language in this bill is ambiguous and unclear and would basically just cause clerks to wonder if they were even in compliance with the statute, depending on which mechanisms they chose to use. So basically, we view at least page 2 of 3408 as a solution in search of a problem.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Steve Trout, State Election Director, and we're here to support our county clerk partners in opposition to this bill. We're concerned that this administrative burden right during the peak time of issuing ballots, when they have many responsibilities to take care of, is concerning. But we would love to work with the sponsor on some other tools that may be available to help to register as many people as possible.
Excellent, thank you. Any questions for this panel? Yeah, Representative Holvey.
I'm just curious whether you oppose the first part of the bill that allows the third party person to deliver those.
Madam Chair, Representative Holvey, no. We're not opposed to that at all. It's the documenting three attempts and the paperwork associated with that, usually at the voter registration deadline when ballots are out.
And Chair Williamson and Representative Holdy, ditto on behalf of the clerks. The first part, as correctly stated by Legislative Council, just clarifies that a person can do that, which I think they already can under Oregon law. I have put written testimony in from the clerks that gives you an example of really the volume of incomplete registrations that we have to deal with actively. Pictures of 2,700 of them from the last cycle from Multnomah County alone. So. Again, we don't no problem with the first page. The second page just causes us all kinds of grief.
Rob, how many of the incomplete cards are you able to, under the current process, able to complete?
Chair Williamson, I'm assuming you're some sort of percentage, and I'm going to have to look backwards towards a couple of clerks who are sitting back there. I'm not sure of the 2,700. That's from
just a ballpark of what
percentage. Incomplete registration cards, about what percentage are we able to clear up?
I would say as long as there is an address or a contact card.
We need to have you come identify yourself for the record. I'm sorry. We could, Rob could repeat it, but thank you so much.
My name is Connie Higgins. I am the Elections and Recording Manager for Marion County. I think that we are able to clear up any cards that come in that have any type of contact information. If there is a card that has no address on it, we still attempt to find other household members with the same last name. I would say it's really hard to say exactly how many we're able to cure.
Okay,
but they. All we attempt to cure all of them.
Great, thank you very much. Yeah.
Maybe Rob can answer this. What is the sanction on an individual who receives a voter registration card but fails to deliver it as represented?
Chair Williamson, Representative McLean. You stumped me on that one. I thought I knew elections law pretty well, but I'm not coming up with any sanction, and I'm wondering if Connie or Bill might.
Chair Williamson and Vice Chair, actually, yes, that would be a Secretary of State's question because they enforce that law if cards are not turned in within the 5-day period.
So.
Maybe Mr. Trout might know if there's an actual violation of law.
Yeah, so we would refer the offenders to the state.
Trout?
We process the cards, but only if we get them.
Musical chairs, Madam Chair. Representative McLean, and I apologize. I will have to look into the statute. There is a provision that we can penalize under. I don't know that off the top of my head, but we can get that information to you.
Thank you. May I follow up? It would be good to know what that is. If this law is clarifying an existing practice, I understand that. If you have a group that's representing itself out to be nonpartisan and registers, say, 100 voters, they flip through the cards and they identify everyone who is a, I don't know, pick one, libertarian, discarding the libertarians into the trash bag and then delivering the rest to be registered. I would like to know, what is the penalty for that, and what do you view as enforcement? Because if we're just trusting the nonpartisan group, well, everyone claims they're nonpartisan except the parties, right? So we have a lot of folks out there, and that's, you know, a lot of faith people are putting in registrations, whether you're deciding to change parties so you can participate in the primary or not. But I think it's something we might look at before we would. Now, that's the first part of the bill. I know you're opposed to the second part, but I just want to know that the first part is actually collectively in an environment that we're assuring those are getting to the right place.
Madam Chair, Representative McLean, I agree, and we'll get a summary of those penalty provisions to you shortly.
All right, thank you.
Oh, Representative Nose.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Two quick questions. One, to the sponsors of the bill. If we were to amend on the second page and maybe, you know, not have to document three attempts, but just make it more of a good faith attempt, maybe that would that be acceptable to you and maybe acceptable to the clerks? That's my first question. I don't know if they want to just answer that or you want to think about it.
I don't think that I'm able to say yes right now, but we are more than willing to, you know, talk about it and come up with amendments. It wasn't in any way to say that you don't already do everything that you reasonably can. We recognize that and we greatly appreciate that. We would just like to have the practice and statute so we can continue to practice that wonderful standard. But yes, most certainly willing to work together to talk about potential amendments.
Okay. My second is more of a comment, Madam Chair, which is that, you know, when I was a younger person and I did voter registration drives with the Student Association and I've done them with other organizations, I feel like everybody kind of gets trained. I don't know what the penalties are, but I remember hearing very clearly it is illegal if you like one party over another to discourage or encourage or to worse, you know, just not turn in that voter registration card. And every drive I ever did with students or, you know, like we took that pretty seriously. Now, I don't honestly remember what the penalties were, so that would be, I'm kind of curious about that. But I do remember thinking, you know, somebody is trusting me to make sure they get to participate in the process. And it's not my job to judge whether or not they should be a Libertarian or a Democrat or a Republican or not affiliated. It's to facilitate the process for them as best we can at the way that they want to, at the level they want to participate.
Thank you. Additional questions? Right. Thank you very much. Did you find it, Aaron? We can. I think you think you did. Okay. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3008. I will open a public hearing on House Bill 3422.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3422 requires Secretary of State to permit authorized individual to observe signature verification process for state initiative or referendum petition. Authorized observer may file written complaint with Secretary of State alleging violation of signature verification process. Secretary of State must accept review and respond to complaint within one business day. Permits appeal of Secretary of State complaint response to Attorney General, who must make final determination within 5 business days of receipt of the appeal.
And I will just say for the committee before we invite folks down that this bill was drafted at my request. Several organizations came and said we want to figure out oversight of this process. It is not a finished product. The folks who are interested, I think, have agreed to get together with the Secretary of State's office after this hearing to work on any issues. So before we start lots of questions, I just want to put that on the record. All right, Rebecca, Laura, and Kimberly.
Chair Williamson, members of the committee, my name is Kimberly McCullough. I'm here on behalf of the ACLU of Oregon. You know, as an organization that's dedicated to civil rights and civil liberties and the protection of those rights and liberties, you know, we're very concerned about our democratic process. And the initiative and ballot measure process is one of those core aspects of democracy in Oregon, and we think it's essential that that process be transparent and fair. We see this bill as just a way to make sure that, that process really is transparent and that the public then can have more trust in the system. So basically, you know, we think it's a great bill. We do understand, as Representative Williamson said, that there are some amendments that need to happen. One of the things is that we want to make sure that that this process, this right to observe, is open to everyone who is registered to vote, not just people who are members of particular political parties, because many people are unaffiliated. And then also, we know that there are some concerns about the involvement of the Attorney General's office, and so it may be that piece of it needs to be to be changed so that the AG's office is not involved. But we do think that some sort of way to resolve complaints. So, you know, if a person thinks that they saw something that happened wrong, that they have a way to complain and that there's some sort of way to appeal that process. So that seems appropriate to us, but maybe not by the Attorney General's office. So thank you, and I'll be happy to answer questions afterwards.
Chair Williamson, members of the
Board,
committee.
Do you wanna scoot that closer to you? Thank you.
Absolutely. For the record, my name is Laura Curtis, here today on behalf of Basic Rights Oregon. Basic Rights Oregon supports House Bill 3422 because it strengthens our democratic process by ensuring transparency and public access during signature verification and ensures it is clear, protected, and includes an appeals process. Basic Rights Oregon was founded more than 20 years ago in response to ballot measure efforts to amend our state constitution to deny basic civil rights to LGBTQ people. Over the decades, we have seen significant changes in the way initiative petition drives have moved from largely volunteer-driven processes to paid signature gathering efforts. Both systems have experienced problems with intentional and unintentional violations of process and procedure. Allowing for citizen observation of the signature verification process has boosted confidence in the process, even when we dislike the outcome. This bill would enshrine the value of transparency that Oregon has cherished for two decades. Groups across the political spectrum and on various sides of an issue have the ability to observe and in some cases raise concerns throughout the process of initiative petitions qualification. Ballot measures often address critically important issues such as civil rights, immigration policy, and more. It is vital to the health of our democracy that there be clear and legally codified processes for citizen review of signature verification that includes the ability to raise concerns with the Secretary of State's office if needed. By supporting House Bill 3422 with amendments, you will ensure that our state's values of a free and transparent democratic process will continue for future generations of Oregonians through citizen involvement in the signature verification process. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Yeah. Chair Williamson, members of the committee, thank you for allowing us to testify. I'm speaking in support of House Bill 3422 with comments. The League of Women Voters supports transparency in government and public access. We value the opportunity to support increasing citizen participation in government. We particularly want to improve awareness and understanding of our voting processes at a time when trust in elections is questioned. We understand it's already possible to observe this process of initiative, petition, signature verification, and the purpose of this bill is to codify that process. We understand that cameras have been ordered, and remote live streaming and recorded observation will be possible. This may make observer access limitations moot. Please consider, in order to allow for inquiry processing time, the elections calendar would be narrowed from 30 days to 20 days. Additional staff would likely be needed depending on our unpredictable number of initiatives and related signature volume generated. This could be costly, especially given the narrow time frame. Consistently this session, the League is concerned with the budget for shortfall, especially with unpredictable cost factors. We're concerned that an unduly large signature verification request could hobble petition processing, resembling recent concerns described in public records access discussions. Relating to this bill, requests could be reviewed to verify relevance of the scope of information requested. For example, an observer might request review of all signatures for a petition. Since dispute referral to the Attorney General has been added from legislative counsel, we recommend consulting the Attorney General's Public Records Task Force. I would add here that I have spoken with a number of the people over there and could answer questions after this. We think it's important to clarify reasonable goals for observation. Observers could verify that signature comparisons are being made in compliance with a well-defined and explained process describing what to watch out for. Observers may expect that they too could personally, closely compare petition sheets and DMV records. If there were an expectation that actual signatures could be seen and compared from petition and DMV sources, for example, there could be privacy concerns. We think the description of authorized observers should be broadened to include citizens at large or others who are not affiliated with political parties and may not be aware of how to contact petition sponsors. We look forward to seeing progress in addressing these questions and participating in that.
Great. Thank you so
for
much.
The opportunity to discuss. I look forward to any questions.
Thank you, and thank you all for agreeing to continue this conversation. Questions? Yes, Representative Barreto.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So in Section 2, and I don't know who wants to answer this, but it says if requested, I would say requested by who, the authorized persons, who authorizes them, and then shall permit only so many persons, the Secretary shall permit only so many persons, is that there's only so many authorized people, and then these authorized persons, are they volunteers, are they paid, and if paid, then by whom?
May I speak to that? This is my reference to moot. I believe this will become irrelevant. The basis for this would have been historically that when you, and I have run voter observer teams, and you sign up your volunteers and you say, okay, these people will watch to make sure there's no intimidation outside the elections office or no campaigning within a 100-foot limit. These people will watch the people who are verifying signatures from the scanned ballot that was turned in, the outer envelope, and the DMV records. These people will observe that the ballots are not being filled in down ticket or that nothing's being trashed, et cetera, and so on and so on. When they go to the signature section of the verification, often this is, these offices are not luxurious and you have to allow walking space and the people have to be back and they can't talk to the people who are doing the processing. And sometimes they can see the computer screen and the person's back. And they can, and you know, I've sat and observed this, and often you think you can see it well enough to think those people didn't learn handwriting the way I did. You can't read them, and sometimes you're close enough to see. I can tell that those are probably from the same person, even on a bad day, and they're well trained to do that. But the fact is, there's often only room for so many people. If this can be observed from, remote live streaming from somebody in Ontario, 100 miles, less than 100 miles, I don't think there would be any limit on who could observe. And the registration thing, to make it fair so that you can have maybe a school civics class wants to observe and can send in students, and maybe a political party, the local two or three or four, and an independent or non-affiliated voter, that they had to struggle to balance those in the past. I think that will be irrelevant if anybody can watch it just by logging in.
Can I follow up? Representative Barreto and Representative Williamson, I think also it seems like what part of what you were getting at is who's authorized and what's authorized, what's an authorized person. And my understanding is that there are amendments in the works to actually clarify that so that it's anyone rather than a person who's authorized by a political party or so on, that it's anyone who is a registered voter who will be able to observe. And I think that even if you have video. You may still want, some people may still want to be in the space. And so I think that there, my understanding is there are amendments that essentially clarify that if there's not enough actual physical space, that you would give equal space to folks that are on different sides of the issue. Does that help?
Yeah, well, a little bit, except that my understanding was the people that actually verified the signatures right now are trained to do that. But you're talking about anyone
people watching.
Of the observers is what we're talking about.
Okay. Not actually
not verifiers. the verifiers. Okay.
All right. Any questions?
Well, just one. So if you have these people that are the verifiers verifying these signatures, and if they say, no, these two don't match up, then the people that are observing who are not trained say, wait a minute, yes, they do match up? Am I getting this right?
Representative Barreto and Chair Williamson, yeah, I mean, the point of people watching, right, is to be able to make sure that things are happening, that the process is happening correctly. So this has a complaint process, and you may have more.
But you have people that are qualified to verify, and then mm-hmm. you have other people that are just qualified to watch, but they're not really verifiers, but they're going to tell these verifiers if they're right or wrong?
No. What they can do is if they have a question, they can submit a request for more information. And frankly, they're not close enough to see. As I was beginning to describe, when I saw this, I could see one person's back and the screen. There were two or three other people over here, and from where I sat, you could see them, but their screens faced them, so you couldn't see their screens. And the point is, you watch the process, and you see it actually makes more sense when you see paper being handled to make sure that people aren't down ticket filling in ballots or tossing some. For this step, it's all on a screen, and they can verify it or mark it for someone to follow up to confirm because it's too close to call, and I think that's part of the process that maybe we want to include here too. Thank you for the question.
All right, thank you.
Chief Trout.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Steve Trout, State Election Director. Great to hear the commentary from the previous panel. We want to be as open and transparent as possible, and what I heard from the previous witnesses pretty much describes what our current practice is. And so, you know, we definitely like to work with them on identifying how we can provide that protection. There already is provision in statute in 250.105 sub 9 that talks about this process, so we probably want to work with that process as well. And it currently includes the opportunity for anyone to be an observer, which I think is really important. That was one of my initial concerns, was we're actually going to be taking a step back, but we want to make sure there's participation for anyone that wants to participate. As the league reported, we are in the process of installing cameras so that people can be able to go online and watch our process and see what's going on. But definitely there's going to want to be people there to observe the process depending on which petition it is. Really the challenge from my chair is the constitutional timelines. The Constitution limits us to 30 days to verify those signatures. And so the current bill, building in a 5-day appeal to the Attorney General and 1-day notice and 1-day appeal for us, really limits us to 19 days, which we don't know if we're going to get two petitions dropped off at the deadline or 20, and so that would have a huge impact on our staffing and the personnel that we'd have to bring in to do that in a much abbreviated time. So I'm grateful to be able to work with the previous panel to try and come up with some shorter timelines, because that 30 days is in the Constitution and can't change, and so that's the biggest concern that we have. And again, I think we want this to be as open and transparent as possible. That's our current practice, and we're not at all opposed to having that documented and put into statute, and think that will be good. We want people to have confidence in the process, but at the same time, we need to have the time to be able to fulfill our constitutional duties.
Thank you very much, and thank you for being open and willing to work with folks on getting this right. questions. Representative Barreto.
To hog the mic, but if you have, I would assume that one person verifies the signature, and then if it's a close call and they're trying to decide, do they bring other verifiers over to say, hey, what do you think?
So, Madam Chair, Representative Barreto, our current practice is, we'll, depending on how many petitions we have, how many signatures we have, we could have up to 10 individuals verifying those signatures. But the process is, if there's a concern or a challenge, that would get appealed to a supervisor who's there in the room with the signature verification. And then our current practice is, if there's observers that want to challenge that decision, then those are set aside and brought upstairs to either the deputy director or myself to be able to go through those at the end of the day. And you know, we want people to have the expert, you know, to be able to have that explanation. And as you said, they are trained to be able to identify different signature characteristics from forensic handwriting experts.
All right, thank you very much. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3422. I will open a work session on House Bill 2578.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2578 was originally heard on February 28th. It creates a small donor-funded elections program to allow candidates for state office to receive a 6-to-1 match on small donor donations. You have a -1 amendment, Madam Chair. The -1 amendment reduces maximum public match for candidates running unopposed, changes definition of qualified small donor contribution to mean contribution between $1 and $250, renames People's Political Committee a small donor political committee, and increases aggregate amount committee can accept from individual to up to $250 per year, adds to requirements that candidates must satisfy to participate in the small donor funded program. From day of after general election through date of primary election, money provided from program will only apply to $125 of aggregate qualified contributions, and candidates may not accept aggregate of more than $250 in qualified small donor contributions or non-matching contributions. Program participant is subject to criminal or civil liability for knowingly filing false campaign records or for violating provisions of the program. Permits candidate to withdraw from program at any time. It increases the maximum public match for candidates for state office during the 2018 general election. The -1 amendment, Madam Chair, does have a fiscal statement. It is a light statement, as this measure does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, and there was a minimal revenue statement issued.
Excellent. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I move the -1 amendments to House Bill 2578.
Vice Chair Rayfield has moved the -1 amendments into House Bill 2578. Is there any discussion? Representative McLean.
Maybe Aaron can answer this. Did the -1 amendment in its complexity there, I wasn't able to discern whether the 6-to-1 match remains in the bill.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, it does.
Okay, thank you.
The objections to motion, Representative McLean, Representative Barreto.
We'll call roll.
Yeah, we'll call roll. Sammy, we'll call roll.
Representative Barreto?
No.
Excused.
Representative Holby?
Yes.
Representative Kenmore?
Excused.
Representative Nose?
Yes.
No.
Vice Chair Rayfield?
Yes.
Chair Williamson?
Yes. Motion passes.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2578 as amended but without recommendation, and the measure be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Vice Chair Rayfield has moved House Bill 2578 as amended but without recommendation, and the measure be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Representative McLean.
So without recommendation is an interesting motion. I'm curious, may I ask Representative Rayfield why he would move this without recommendation?
You may. Are you asking?
I am, sir.
Okay, then I would love to answer. Representative McLean, I think the rationale behind moving this without recommendation is giving our current budget situation. This will have a fiscal on it. We are still in the process of working out the details regarding the fiscal components. And as you heard during the public hearing, there are potentially other ways that we're currently using our tax credits to fund political contributions here in Oregon, and we're trying to suss that out as we move further in the session.
Thank you. Well, Madam Chair, I'm going to oppose this anyway, but, you know, a tax credit, if you could argue, was a payment, is a one-to-one. This is now a six-to-one, and and in my view, that is improper intervention by our state government into political speech. And we have all sorts of protections in place, including a free speech clause that is very broad. So I don't believe this bill is done with its policy adjustments. Should not go to Ways and Means. I think it needs to be tabled, and a lot more work done on it. Just not convinced that this is a necessary element to fair and broad elections. And as I say, I think it's troubling to me of the compelled political speech of the 6-to-1 ratio. So I'll be a no.
Thank you very much. Yes, Representative Rayfield.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This system with the 6-to-1 match allows politicians to be elected by only small dollar contributions. And in effect, that takes out the influence of large donations or big money and interest from our election system, which is the fundamental reason why I'm supporting the bill. The 6-to-1 match in empowering small donations or people to be elected by small donations really allows ordinary Oregonians to have the same voice that large moneyed interests currently have in our election system. That's why I'm supporting this, along with the fact that this will open up the political process for candidates that otherwise might not have had access to office, and that has been proven in other jurisdictions that have implemented this, as well as this type of a system with the emphasis on smaller donors, folks that otherwise have not contributed. It allows candidates and encourages politicians to communicate with those folks as they move forward and attempt to get elected to office under the system. And that's why I'll be supporting it.
May I offer a retort? Representative Rayfield seemed to indicate that because the altruistic intent that he might have and the sponsors, that somehow the means or the ends justify the means. At the end of the day, he never answered the question. We are at 6-to-1 map. You could say, you could claim to be saving puppies and children and everything else, but at the end of the day, there is no answer for this plain fact. It's 6-to-1 ratio of investment. And you got to wonder, no matter how wonderful it is or how altruistic you feel, it's still a 6-to-1 match, and the state government is intervening in political speech. And so when we had a 1-to-1 match before, maybe that should go away if people don't like it. But now we've expanded to 6-to-1. I just don't think that intervention, I think it will have constitutional scrutiny and may not survive given the strength of the political speech clause of the Oregon Constitution. So no amount of altruism negates the fact that that multiplier is on a head collision course with our state constitution.
All right. Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be knowing this too, but I'm wondering if we were just concerned with a cap on the amount of money spent in a campaign, why the complicated process here, and why we wouldn't just say, let's just put a $30,000 cap on, say, a state representative race.
Question. All right. With that, Sam, will you call the roll?
Representative Barreto?
No.
Representative Heck?
Excused.
Representative Holby?
Yes.
Representative Cattimer?
Excused.
Representative Mills?
Yes.
Representative Smith Warner?
Aye.
Vice Chair McLean?
No.
Vice Chair Rayfield?
Yes.
Chair Williamson?
Yes. Motion passes. I'll close that work session on House Bill 2578. I will open a work session on House Bill 2586.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2586 was originally heard on March 7th. It exempts fees associated with filing voters' pamphlet statement from $750 threshold required to file as a political committee. It comes to you with no revenue and no fiscal impact.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2586 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Rayfield has moved House Bill 2586 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Can we stand at ease?
Sure. Stand at ease. Currently, Vice Chair Rayfield has moved House Bill 2586 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. We are at discussion. Is there any discussion? All right. Are there any objections? All right. Not. Motion passes. Carriers, Representative Rayfield, I will close the work session. There is no meeting next Tuesday. We will roll over the agenda. And Aaron, am I missing anything?
You are not.
All right. With that, we are adjourned. Seen anything?
You are not.
All right. With that, we are adjourned. And Aaron, am I missing?